Welcome back to the Anti Diet Club podcast. I'm here with my co-host Gillian, and we have an awesome episode for you today, all about this feeling of needing to lose weight. And that's why we entitled it, "But I Need to Lose Weight," because we know many of you struggle with this. But before we dive in, we kind of just wanted to talk about the podcast. If you're new here, we have fortnightly episodes that are released on a Friday, and you can actually find us on social media at the Anti Diet Club podcast. So if you want to follow along, know when the next episode's coming out, understand a little bit more about, like, and see clips and understand more about what we're up to and what's coming up, that's the place to find us. How are you?
I'm well. I was gonna, you know, I was about to do the typical British thing and be like, "Yeah, I'm great, thanks." I have a sore ear; it's kind of sore and gross. And but anyway, that's not here. What we're here to talk about. I'm sure you're not interested in my ailments, but other than that, well, it's Friday. We're recording the podcast. It's always good on a Friday when I'm recording a podcast. Friday.
Yeah, and we didn't come onto the podcast eating today like we did last week.
Because we didn't.
I've been up since 5:30, so I had my breakfast quite some time
ago.
Oh,
you had your breakfast a while ago. Yeah, I had mine before I jumped on. So yeah, that's it's not like us, is it?
No, normally on a Friday, we kind of come with food, with tea, with coffee, with whatever we have.
I have coffee. I mean, I'm not, you know, wild.
Not an animal.
yeah. Come on.
Yeah, I know. Cool. So we wanted to get going with this episode, which, again, like I said, we've entitled, "But I Need to Lose Weight," because we know that that feeling and that, you know, desire for weight loss doesn't really ever go away, right? It's not something I think we both were saying just before we came on air, you know, this is something that you can't actually really expect it to kind of go away, especially in the kind of culture we live in, right? Like, it's not something that ever, you know, you'll get rid of this desire for weight loss and you won't worry about it ever again. That's kind of false, right?
Yeah. And again, I kind of feel like, do you know what? I've been doing this work long enough now, and I've been involved in the kind of fat positive community for long enough that I'm so over this idea of, like, you know, caterpillar to butterfly, where it's like you go through recovery or you go through a healing process and you get to this, like, fixed destination of healed full stop or recovered full stop, and you never have, like, a shitty bad body image thought again, or you don't have those thoughts creep in of, "But I need to lose weight." And, you know, I think even as I see other people in the industry, other professionals, coaches, dietitians, therapists, who I think could do to be more honest around this stuff, right? I get it. We live in, like, a capitalist society where coaches and dietitians are, you know, trying to sell services, and business coaches encourage coaches like us to present as, like, you're going to go from, like, you know, this to this. And it's like this massive transformation. Yes, it is a huge transformation, but we also have responsibility, and I do with all my clients in the very beginning, setting expectations. And if your expectation is that you embark on this process and you're never going to have a negative thought again about your body, or you're going to have those thoughts of, "Oh God, maybe I need to lose weight," then you're kind of setting yourself up for failure from the very, very beginning. So I just like to be really honest about this stuff. I think, I don't know if it would even be helpful for us to, at this point, like, even just briefly talk about our own experience with this stuff, right? Because I know I've just gone through, like, last year, one of the hardest years of my life. And we know that when we are under emotional duress, when we are feeling stressed, when life is particularly challenging, that's when these thoughts creep in, no matter how much work you've done. That's when these thoughts creep in. I have to say, I feel like last year was a bit of a testament to the work that I've done. I feel like my inner critic definitely went to a lot of different places, like, for sure, right, about being not good enough in certain ways. But I feel really flipping lucky that my body wasn't really a target of that. But that's not to say that there weren't days when I was just like, do you know what, when I'm teaching yoga or I'm practicing yoga or I'm like trying to tie my shoelaces or whatever it is, that it would, life would be easier if I didn't have this belly or if I didn't have these boobs or if I fitted into smaller clothes. Of course that still happens, right? But it doesn't spiral and it doesn't take us to a place where we then inflict violence on ourselves.
Yeah. And I love your honesty there, because it's true. It's not something that you ever really completely get rid of, but it's like you say, like, you know, the things that you went through would be like typically the time when you would like turn in on yourself. And the same for me, you know, with last year, a lot of personal losses in my family. And that would be a time where, you know, I typically would be very much like, I need to get a grip of my health and I need to do this and I need to do that. And, you know, I would kind of go at it with the kind of you only live once kind of thing in my head of like, I need to do this for myself because blah, blah, blah. And actually, although those thoughts may have kind of fleetingly like gone through, like you say, like maybe having thoughts of thinking like, oh, if my stomach didn't stick out that way, like my trousers would fit better or like this or that, or like be able to fit into those jeans or da da da. Actually, what happened was I was able to sit with the really difficult stuff that came up. Yeah. And at times I was thinking, gosh, this was easier when I just used to diet over the top of this.
Yeah.
But actually, like, once I kind of go through a lot of it, I'm like, actually, I'm really grateful. I'm able to really go with that and not push it down and hide it and, you know, shove it away. And kind of like I say, like, I always talk about that, like, you know, really like dieting over the top, like a layer of something over the top. So it's like, I'm focused on this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it gives me something to
control,
kind of achieve and control. And like, feel like, even though I would never really be able to control it, it does. Yeah. It feels like you're less vulnerable. Like you've got a shield in front of you. Like there's something surrounding you.
Yeah. There's something that you're in control. Well, but the illusion of control that is yours, that you're pursuing regardless of what else, you know, is going on in your life. Yeah. Thanks for kind of bringing my attention to that, because I guess I hadn't really acknowledged that as well, in that how differently might have dealt with my life last year if I was kind of, if I had this veil of dieting over it, or if I was using that as a coping mechanism or a distraction or as a means to try and control my life. I think I would have faced the difficult things less. And
I love that you just said there, a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we often talk about that enough. And I know that's kind of what I was referring to, but that word, those words is, I just want to kind of pinpoint that just for a second, because we often think of dieting as being something that we do simply to get thinner. Mm-hmm. And that's not what we're saying here. What we're saying is actually, this is a tool that often people are using, like a coping mechanism. I'm sorry I interrupted, but
not at all. I'm not even sure if this discussion really is, like, you know, given our title, but I need to lose weight is massively relevant, but I think it's adjacent. So I wanted to speak about folks, I guess, who I've come across recently, both in my coaching practice, but also I've been doing, because we're in January, I think maybe when this podcast episode comes out, it'll be February, but right now we're recording in January, and it's like National Weight Loss Month. It's National Shrink Your Body Month.
I didn't know that
was
a thing.
Yeah, it's National Shrink. No, it's not. I'm joking. It's not.
Sorry. I was like, what is she talking about? They have literally a day for everything, and they do. Seriously, and I was like, are you actually joking me?
No, it's not an official thing. It's an unofficial thing, but it flipping feels official, right?
I'm dying.
Oh my god, tempted.
Oh my gosh, I've been up so early.
Yeah.
She had me then. I was thinking, have they actually called it that?
No, they've not called it that, but that's what we know it to be, January. Right? So I've been, as my kind of pushback to diet culture, I've been going into like different organizations and places to speak about anti-fat bias and about diet culture. And a couple of nights ago, I was speaking to a mental health charity. And the question, it never ceases to amaze me that there's always there's always this question of, yeah, I get it. Like, we all need to be body positive and love our bodies, which, by the way, is not my message. But we, you know, we don't need to diet. We can just sort of embrace our curves, but of course, up to a point, right? And then up past a certain point, there's a body size in which, well, of course, those people need to lose weight, right?
Yeah, for their health.
Yeah, for their health. Yeah. And given that I was like speaking to a mental health charity, they were obviously really interested in like people's health and well-being generally. So I think we need to speak about this, because I am betting we have listeners out there who feel like, yeah, I want my daughter to be like body positive. I want my friends look great in no matter what size body they're in, friends look great. But for me, there's this double standard of like, no, but actually I need to lose weight. It's okay for everyone else, but I actually need to. And this need to can come from, in my experience, two different places. One, from a kind of acceptance, desirability, feeling like you're good enough as a person, but also trying to reduce judgment and reduce criticism from friends or family, or even like employers or potential people that you would date in an intimate relationship. There's that kind of like conform to the thin ideal from a desirability and attractability perspective. But then there's also this other thing about health and this belief that we need to lose weight for our health. And in some cases, that can be true, right? In terms of not necessarily for health, but in order to comply with regulations, in order to access treatment. When, you know, we talked to Emma in the last episode or a couple episodes ago about in order to access fertility treatment, but it's really similar to access, like a knee replacement or a hip replacement or other types of treatments. You have to meet a BMI. So I think it's really, really important that you and I, just to kind of acknowledge our privilege, I think we both agree that we exist in small fat bodies on the spectrum of body size, and therefore we hold a lot of privilege, right? So we can, as responsible practitioners, sit here and say to somebody who's in a bigger body, you should not want to lose weight, because that doesn't align with, you know, progressive thinking around anti-fat bias or what our so-called agenda is around this stuff, right? We can't really say that, because at the end of the day, you and I absolutely respect other people's individual autonomy around their body. And if they are suffering systemic oppression and discrimination because of the size of their body, then who are we to say, no, you're a bad person if you were thinking about shrinking it?
Yeah. And who, you know, and I totally agree with what you're saying there. Like, who are we to say that, you know, you shouldn't desire this, or that you can't be even anti-diet or body positive still with those thoughts? You know, that's exactly what we are here for, is to hold the space for those people, anyone in any size body, but, you know, holding space for people wherever they are at. It isn't like a, you know, and that's kind of what I quite like about like the anti-diet world, is that it feels like a community of people who are welcoming to anybody wherever they are along their journey, because we're not saying you have to be so, like, you don't have to be a complete, you can actually be an activist and still feel those thoughts. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we ever like put people in a box in the way some other things do in society, but you're right in terms of, you know, there is that kind of, I need to do it for my health. One thing I hear is often, I don't feel myself at this size. I don't recognize myself at this size.
I don't feel good at this size.
I don't feel good. I don't feel healthy at this size. And, you know, a lot of people are in the belief that their body size, the number on the scale, is the reason for that, not actually that they could continue with other health behaviors that might make them feel better regardless. But that's what that's our job, to do that and help them. But yeah, those in a bigger body, you know, being told to lose weight every single time you even go near any kind of medical establishment,
yeah,
you know, being told by family members, you know, concerned family members, I just want you to be here. You know, I want you to be around for your kids. I want you to be, you know, physically able to participate in all the things that we do and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's very, challenging, I think, for people to kind of get past that, even, you know, and even with the logic and knowing that dieting hasn't worked for them in the past, you know, I've had plenty of clients who've said to me, actually, the last 3-4 diets I went on didn't shift anything. Nothing happened.
Yeah.
Because their body gets to a point where it's resisting that weight loss.
Yeah.
But logically knowing that doesn't stop them from just wishing and desiring that they could just be slightly smaller in some cases.
Yeah. You know. And I think it comes back to the double standards thing again, in that we can hear statistics all day long about, you know, 95 to 98% of diets don't work. But we kind of are like, yeah, but if I was better at it, or if I was good enough, or if I was more motivated, I could be in that really small percentage. Mm. I could make it happen, kind of thing. And the fact that it's not, that we actually just feel like a failure. But I wanted to kind of speak about then, let's dive in a little bit deeper to, do you agree that you, am I missing anything in terms of people want to feel, people feel like they need to lose weight either from a health perspective or from a attractability, desirability perspective? Is there anything else that I'm missing before we dive into them?
I mean, I would say a safety perspective, you know, like I said, like, you know, avoiding these systems of oppression, like, you know, what you feel for yourself is one thing, but what society decides that you need for your best interest is, you know, we can't escape that. We can't escape that at all, because it comes from, like I said, family, people in the street, like, you know, people decide, it's just everywhere you turn, people in the office. Oh, we're going to do this challenge. We're going to do that. We're going to, it's for the good of our health. And even if you decide that you don't want to pursue that, you don't want to kind of opt into that, sometimes it can be a place of safety to, I mean, participate to kind of.
Yeah, thanks for naming that. I feel like that really speaks to my thin privilege, right? We're naming safety. Like, for some people, I'm just imagining somebody in a bigger body who maybe listens to this podcast who's like, yeah, diets don't work. They're absolute bullshit. And I know that I can pursue health in the body that I'm in. And I know that actually I can be accepted by my friends and loved by my partner. But it's just, the world hates fat people.
Yeah.
And therefore, like, I don't want to, like, have people make comments to me in the supermarket. I don't want people to be sneering at me when I can't fit into, like, an airplane seat or whatever. Like, that, and thanks for really naming that as safety, because that is what we're talking about.
Because, you know, when we go through talking about intuitive eating and helping clients do intuitive eating and things like that, you know, we talk about the liberation state, like the legalization of food and allowing, but there's privilege in that, because to be allowed to just consume food in a way that you want to, trying to honor your body and learn all those signals and unlearn diet culture is very difficult if you're in a bigger body and you have other people's opinions and judgments and control in some ways, you know. It's not always, it's something that's kind of come up in, like, obviously, you know, we work with many different clients.
Yeah.
And it's just different people bring up different things that they struggle with. And that's just one of the things that I think, like you say, sometimes we forget these things because of privilege, but being able to, you know, like we often talk about in, like, marketing and, like, on social media about, you know, being able to go out to the restaurant and choose whatever you want. Not for everyone.
I'm so mindful of this stuff, right? It's like, because there's many different audiences, right, there that we're speaking to, and as you say, that we have as clients, there are people who are not, like, societally discriminated against, but still feel like, you know, so let's say they're in a straight size body we try not to mention numbers on this podcast. So let's just say a straight size body, meaning you can go into any shop and buy clothes mm-hmm. and, you know, and that you can fit into any kind of like car seat or airplane seat or theater seat without any problem. We still have people with those size bodies who feel like for them, it feels unsafe to not lose weight or to gain weight from a place of, you know, I'm going to be judged. I'm going to judge myself. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be judged by other people. I feel like I'm going to risk losing that belonging. That's that sense of love.
Yeah.
And respect in a professional sense, maybe depending what your job is. Right. That idea of safety is it really does go from the very kind of top end or far end of the weight spectrum right the way through, obviously to a lesser degree. It becomes more kind of maybe emotional safety rather than like physical safety, right? Mm. So I want to just continue before we really get into the kind of health discussion about this idea about desirability in this idea that we need to be thin in order to like ourselves or for other people to like us. And I guess I want to ask you, like, what's your experience with that, either with clients or with yourself?
In terms of what liking myself, in terms
So in terms of being able to accept yourself or feel like you're going to be accepted by other people, from a judgment perspective, because I think that's such a huge impetus for people saying, no, but I need to lose my weight because I want to be liked by myself and other people.
Yeah. And so I think what I often see is that we don't necessarily have the evidence that other people don't like us in our particular body at that time. Mm-hmm. We're coming at it with our own bias, our own judgments, which is normal and expected, you know, given the society we live in. But through that, we decide what other people think of our body. We decide straight away, you know, we have this like layer of, well, they must be thinking that. And sometimes I saw this recently come up this week with a client, actually, you know, reinforced by comments from other people, talking about other people's bodies in a positive or negative way. And mentally, I was talking to my client about how we mentally work out where we are on that scale of beauty and thinness in terms of what they have just said.
Yeah.
Because and it's like there's like this barometer in our brain where we're just like, am I this? Where am I?
Where am I?
Is it the ideal? Where do I fit along that line?
In comparison to the other people that I'm in the room with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, when other people express, you know, they are what they think looks healthy, what they think looks attractive, what they think looks successful in all sorts of different, just casual conversations.
Yeah.
That is sending, our brains are just literally like wired to just be kind of searching around for
threat.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. It is a response to threat, right? Mm-hmm. This idea that I know it's fine for you. You look great. By the way, you look great in your size body. Like you can you're so confident. You can totally cut it off. But for me, not for me. It's different for me.
We had Becca on this podcast as a guest, I think back in season three.
Yeah.
And I did a live with her inside my Facebook group the other day. And we were talking about this exact thing. She gets that a lot where people are, you know, she's in a bigger body, but people come to her and go, yeah, but it's okay for you because you're tall and you're confident and you just know what to wear, all the right things. And she's like,
I actually just spat my coffee out there.
Because I'm so funny, or just because you can't get it together because you're in your 40s?
No,
now.
Because you're hilarious.
Good answer. I like that. But yeah, because like she's saying, like people are always saying to her, but if I only had your confidence, then I could exist in my body the way you exist in yours. And what she tries to kind of get across, but doesn't want to, you know, be educating people without their permission, is I've done the work. This is just what you're seeing here is the product of years and years of unlearning this BS around what we shouldn't look like.
Yeah.
But she is not, like she was talking about this, you know, not to make this about Becca, bless her, and she doesn't give me permission to talk about it, but it's not something that doesn't ever affect her. And I'm telling you what the difference is. It's people and the circumstance you're in. So if you are, say, on holiday with particularly fat phobic family who are maybe all in thin bodies or who are at least very, very strict dieters or control their food, all that kind of stuff, that can change how you feel versus going on a girl's holiday with people who are really liberated about their bodies. I mean, like, you can feel the dynamic when you just
talk about it.
Like, and this is why it only takes, it was, you know, talking about this week, it will only take the booking of a holiday to change how you feel about your body.
Yeah.
Because it's in your mind, you're like, oh, I need to look a certain way because do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I totally know what you mean, because
in that
no. It's just like that radar of fear. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. I was just thinking, when you were speaking there, I spent New Year in North Wales with 7 other women. There was 8 of us all together. And that's kind of like the only holiday I would say like that I've been with like a large group of women. And me and my partner are obviously very anti-diet and body positive and have done a shit ton of work around this stuff. But the other women, I wouldn't necessarily say have done like specific work around dismantling anti-fat bias, but they are a bunch of very liberal, progressive, feminist women who are very sort of, you know, body positive, sex positive, like in all the different ways, and very actively sort of try to dismantle their biases across all areas. And I've never felt more safe, more held, more supported.
Yeah.
The celebration that we all had around food. And I don't remember hearing a single comment about body size or amounts of food or types of food or anything like that. And that, you could say that was curated in a way by me, in that I do only hang around with people who, you know, are not going to inflict harm, right? Who are actually working through their own shit like that. So, but it's not like I said anything before the holiday. It's not like I was like, by the way, food and body. It's just, that's just the culture within that group of women, right? And I feel really fortunate to have been around that. But that's not everybody's case. Not everybody can just be like, oh, I'm going to ditch my pals because they're all, you know, into dieting. But unfortunately, you do find that if that is triggering and that doesn't align with your values anymore, you might end up finding that you want to be spending less time with these people. And that's shitty. Like, that, there's a grief process to go through there for sure.
Definitely.
And a process of finding new pals.
Yeah, but it's difficult because, you know, and I think I love what you're saying there and describing your time away, and that's like incredible. But I think, you know, there is an element of being able to make those choices, because quite a lot of us like have our friendship groups are based in when we were dieting. They're created in those situations. But often, you know, especially I think this is where I find as a mum, we have a support network of friends who we need and want to be around because it actually fits in with our life and the kids and the routines that we kind of end up in. And it's not, it's, although I do think there's an element of you have to maybe limit your exposure, you have to protect yourself, protect your journey. But I often think instead of, you know, or in some ways, if you can't really ditch it, or maybe you don't want to, I have lots of friends who are still deep in diet culture and we just bond over other things.
Yeah.
And I've had to set those boundaries, and that's fine. And I'm comfortable with that because I've got it to that place. So it is possible, but also just finding the additional community or additional friendships.
Yeah.
Like, instead of like, you know, maybe like, you, I think it's different for everyone. I think it's different for everyone.
Yeah. But no, I get that. I hadn't really appreciated the fact that like there are some, I'm thinking like for you, you've named it as parenting, like those other parents are really valuable to you because you lean on them in certain ways. They are your community in terms of raising your children, right? I'm thinking of other people, like maybe somebody who has a disability, right? The disabled community might be something that is really, really important to somebody. Mm-hmm. But not everyone within that community is going to be like body positive or work through their anti-fatness. So it's like you do still want to be in a community, and you can't curate it. You can't just say, well, I'm sorry, you're not body positive, I'm not going to hang out with you, because you really need that. You need
You've got no choice
in your life. Yeah.
Work families as well. People spend many hours of their day with more so with work colleagues than they do their own families, because that is life and that's the reality. And actually, you can't necessarily turn your back on those sorts of things. I think it's just very individual. I think you have to approach it with a, what do I have the control to change and what do I not? And if I can't change those things, where can I find some community so I can go and breathe a sigh of relief? You know, come and listen to us. We're here every 2 weeks on a Friday. You know, come and listen to us. Like, we talk about that, you know, go into fat positive spaces and safe spaces where you can just like kind of
breathe a sigh of relief. Yeah, exactly. It's interesting you talk about it. Kind of brings me on to the next thing you were saying, like focus on what you can control, right? Mm. And the fact that we try to use weight loss or weight management, whether that's for weight loss or to prevent weight gain, as a way of trying to control. But actually, you know, I'm always very quick to say it's an illusion of control, because if you're saying stick to what you can control, well, your body and your weight ain't going to be it, because sad news, folks, that's like really not possible to do that. And I think that's like what I always come back to when somebody says to me and I'm kind of put on the spot, yeah, but I weigh X, I need to lose weight, right? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, well, irrespective of whether that's coming from your doctor or whether that's coming from your own kind of internalized fat phobia or the discrimination that you're facing societally from other people, it doesn't, wherever the impetus or motivation or fear is coming from, it actually doesn't change the fact that it's going to be really, really unlikely that you will be able to lose weight for the long term. And that's the sad fact that I always circle back to. Mm-hmm. It's like you can spend your life trying. And I want to just reiterate what I said at the beginning. Like, we're not here to say to people, don't pursue weight loss. You're a bad person if you do. Absolutely not. Everybody has that choice. But the folks that we work with are people who have pursued and pursued and pursued and pursued. And we know that pursuing weight loss is one of the biggest predictors of weight gain for a third to two thirds of people. So not only does it damage our relationship with our body, not only does it damage our relationship with food, but it actually, we are more likely to end up getting the opposite result than what we are embarking on.
Yeah, that's the reality, isn't it? Like, if you can logically, like, you know, you can kind of approach it with like thinking that you logically would feel better, or, you know, you need to lose weight because, like you say, your doctor's telling you to, but like it doesn't change the fact that that might not be possible for you.
Yeah.
And it's not possible for 95% of us. Otherwise we wouldn't, you know, be here talking about this stuff, because this is the thing. It's like, if you embarked on a diet, like what is it they say in the book? Like, if you embark on a diet knowing that you're going to gain, you know, it all back and then more, would you have started in the first place? Yeah. And like we've said on previous episodes, if you'd have told me that during my dieting days and where my brain was at, I would have just gone, I'll risk it, because, you know, I would have hoped I'd sit in that 5%, maybe 2% of people that do make it work, or just even believe that actually it's okay, I'll just eat that way forever. but that isn't a guarantee. Like, this is the thing I think we're trying to get across, is like, even that isn't a guarantee that your body wouldn't start to pull the weight back on. It actually doesn't matter if you're sticking to it longer term. You kind of just mess with your body in so many different ways.
Exactly. And you know, just because we've intellectually kind of decided or been sort of convinced of not only our own life experience of, weight loss is just like, I'm on a hide into nothing, and you've looked at the statistics, how do people, this is a question that I get asked a lot. It's like, just because you intellectually decide, okay, I'm not going to pursue weight loss anymore, how do we start to dial that flame down or that noise down of, but life would be better if you lost weight? We said at the beginning of this podcast, it's likely that you're never going to be free from that, but it is possible to dial it down. And I'm just curious, like in your journey, what has helped you over time get to a place of, yeah, life would probably be easier if I was in a smaller body, but do you know what? I'm not. So here we are. And just kind of like getting on with life. How do you get to that? What's involved in that journey?
I mean, obviously, like my own experience is going to be tainted with a considerable amount of size privilege. But I think for myself, it's really about like naming the reasons why it would be smaller, easier, if I was in a smaller body. Because once you start like naming those reasons and kind of really putting not a label on it, but really identifying like, well, why? Well, because I can't get clothes in my size unless I shop in the Plus or online. And then, you know, though, when I'm naming it that way, it kind of says it's not me that's the problem. Even though it doesn't change my body, it doesn't change that as a fact. It's not, you know, I'm going from naming my body as being too big onto I'm naming shops are not carrying the sizes that are actually existing in the world. That's just one example of like naming the systems. And I think often like asking myself, you know, okay, certain things might be easier in a smaller body, but what would I want to give up the way that I live, the way that I can enjoy my food, my life, my family, my freedoms to go there again? And I think back to the days when I would be like, right, and then get the list of all the things that was allowed and clearing out all the cupboards and that, you know, all the things that are attached to that, the cost, the time, you know, because at this current day and age, like, honest to goodness, like I'm loving the fact that I'm able to use all the food in my house. I'm not throwing things out just because they are a certain type of food. It's just, you know, you're able to use more, you're able to actually enjoy more in different ways. And like, it expands like your like ability to like choose different food. And, you know, with timing or like just everything, and it kind of takes away that stress. So I try and imagine myself like back in that like restriction and what that would take away from me. And it takes me about 10th of a second to be like, no thanks,
I'm not doing that.
What about you?
I'm thinking in terms of desirability, right? Because I know a lot of folks struggle with that in terms of whether you're in a partnership or not, this idea of like, can I truly be loved and not just loved, but like, do I look hot? Like, am I desired? Like, can I be really like beautiful in this body size? And I think what really helps me is to look around at my friends for a start, right? And think, you know, would I think any differently about my friends if they were in a different size body? Would I, or my fat friends, what's the reason that I'm hanging out with you? You know, how important is your body size in this? And I have, you know, I'm sure we all do have friends all across the weight spectrum. And my fat friends are amazing because of who they are, right? I also probably have a deep respect for them because I think it's fucking hard to exist in our world in a fat body. And I think my friends do it brilliantly. And I'm proud of them for that, right? So I think they're awesome. But I also think, you know, my thin friends, if their body size was to change, like, I wouldn't give a fuck. That's not why I'm hanging out with them. So I think on that basis, they've surely got to think the same about me. I can only go on that, right? That they are going to think the same about me. And then the same in partnership as well. Like, I've said this tons of times on the podcast, but like when I think of the reasons why I'm with my partner, who's probably in roughly the same size body as me, so like on the spectrum of fatness, a small fat body, but like, would like when I think about like what it is that I find attractive about her, yes, it's her body and everything else, but there's no sort of conditionality attached to that. There's no kind of like, I would feel differently if your body was different. And therefore I for my mental health have to believe that the same is reciprocated, right?
Yeah.
So I think that is helpful. I also think about like all the, like, think about all the people that you love in your life. Like if you had a granny who was like, you know, in a bigger body that was like the feeder of the family, like who doesn't love granny who's the feeder of the family, right? Like we don't not love granny because, like, you know, because of her body size. So, you know, and I also look at people in the fat community who are all in relationships and partner, like the ones that are in relationships and partnerships, like you, I have a ton of examples of people who can find love and people who can have a really joyous life in a fat body.
Yeah.
So that really helps me dial down that kind of critical voice. Also knowing that when those thoughts come up of, oh my God, like I'm, you know, feeling uncomfortable in my body, or I like need to lose weight, I do always see that as a means to control and a coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. I ask myself, like I say this to my clients probably in every session, ask yourself, if this isn't about my body, what is it about?
Yeah.
And that really, really helps me, because then I can see where my anxiety and my fear is coming from. I think another thing that's really hard for people, particularly at this time of year, is trying to move past just the fantasy, right? Like this, when we get down to it, this statement, but I need to lose weight, that is somebody who is still holding on to the fantasy of my life would be better when I lose weight. Now, I'm probably at this point not speaking to somebody who is like systemically discriminated against because of the size of their body. So I'm not really talking to people at this point who, you know, struggle with infrastructure in our world to actually exist and belong. I'm speaking to somebody who is probably more a straight size person. I would say, you know, that fantasy that you're living in, that your life would suddenly be better if you were a different body size, I think that's a cover up, like you were talking about earlier, that is something that is like shielding you actually seeing the truth about your life. That might seem really, really harsh, but I know that was the case for me. There was underlying things that you know, that I wasn't prepared to look at because I was so fixated on my body being the problem. And I think a lot of people know that, and maybe that's why they keep are stuck in dieting.
And a lot,
because they don't want to look at it.
Yeah, I see a lot of patterns within exactly what you just described there, in terms of very close and intimate relationships, you know, where people just don't want to kind of look under that rock because it's tough. And I get it, I totally get it. And you know, it's not unheard of for me to have clients who come in who feel like they need to get a grip of their food, kind of, you know, work through it, and then realize, you know, actually a lot of this isn't about my food, but then just pause because they don't necessarily, they're not ready, they're not in that position, because that's not what they came in to work through. But it's like, now they have acknowledged it, they might need to sit with that for a while and take a break and decide whether they want to kind of go through that further. You know, there's some resistance there, which only, you know, as a coach, as you know, you can only hold the space. You can't force anyone to look at that, acknowledge that, or really kind of dive deeper into
I feel like we can't wrap up without actually like head on acknowledging some health stuff. And this might feel really kind of boring in terms of a statistical sense, but I think it's really, really important that if you are absolutely convinced that you need to lose weight for your health, then I would want to point you to some research, I suppose. Before I do that, I've worked with people who absolutely has engaged in weight loss in order to access treatments. And there's no judgment. at all. I understand when people, that's a choice that people make, to lose a certain amount of weight in order to have a family or grow a family, or in order to access a treatment. Like, that is a shitty system that we exist in. And I'm so sorry that people are forced to have to do that. And I want to say that you're also not a failure if you put the weight back on afterwards, because ultimately that's very, very likely that that's what's going to happen. And what I feel shitty about is the fact that people are made to do that and they end up with an eating disorder, or they end up with a very damaged relationship with food, or they end up weight cycling and, you know, they end up with physical symptoms because of weight cycling, which is so, so harmful. So I want to address that head on. But in terms of other kind of statistics and research, I think it would be really, really interesting to look at death rates, right? And when we look at people all across the, if we want to reference the dreaded BMI system, but unfortunately that's the categories of weight that exists and how research is measured against. But I think I don't think a lot of people realize that when we look at mortality rates, it's not actually people in the normal BMI category that live the longest. Sorry if that's what out there, if you think is the case, that being in the normal BMI is going to sort of guarantee you the longest life. That is not true. What we see is actually people in the quote unquote overweight category are the people who live the longest. And then once you get out into the margins, the smaller end of the scale and the bigger end of the scale, then the curve does start to go up a bit. Also, in terms of health behaviors, when you look at BMI across the board, across all the BMI categories, once you start to engage in five health behaviors, so that health behavior might be not smoking, it might be not consuming more than the average alcohol a week, it might be eating five fruit and veg a day, it might be doing moderate exercise. Once you engage in, I don't even think it's as much as five, but even four or five health promoting behaviors, your likelihood of like risk of death, it pretty much evens out.
Yeah, it's the same.
Pretty much evens out.
The same. And this is why, kind of circling back to what we said earlier, when, you know, people say, I just don't feel very good. You know, quite often it's because the only time they're engaging in some of those particular health behaviors, like movement, like, you know, cutting down on alcohol, that kind of stuff. Some of that is because they're embarking on a restrictive plan. It's not actually the change in food or the other stuff. It's because they're actually starting to value themselves and put themselves
prioritize
first,
their prioritize. Health.
This is why, you know, I keep coming back to anti-diet is not anti-health.
No,
we're not. That's not.
Can you say
suggesting.
That again?
Anti-diet is not anti-health.
Can you say it again? The people in the back didn't hear.
We're not, we're just not saying just, it's not about, like, I don't want to use the word kind of giving up on yourself, because that's not what people are doing. They're struggling in this idea that they have to eat a certain way to be healthy. And then when they're not on that plan, they kind of just drift into like not even, you know, taking care of their own needs and like honoring their own health. But you can do all of those things without embarking on a restrictive diet.
I would argue that giving up dieting is a health promoting behavior. If you're genuinely interested in your health, there are so many other things that you can do. My health promoting behavior right now is not taking my phone to bed, because that's a bad habit of mine. Not going great, but, you know, I'm trying. Getting out into fresh air. I feel like I need to start weightlifting, or like lifting weights, because I feel like my knees maybe need help now that I'm in my mid-40s. You know, there's a ton, drinking more water, connecting with your friends. Like, there's a ton of health promoting behaviors that you can actually do that can shift the needle into that place of feeling better about yourself. But unfortunately, we are led to believe that if you have fat on your body that spills over the top of your waistband, that then that is a trigger to you of I don't feel good, I just don't feel good at this weight. Buy bigger jeans, which I realize is a privilege. Buy bigger jeans and focus on things that actually you've got, that are far more likely to shift the way that you feel about yourself than weight loss, because that's the long-term results of that is going to be pretty shitty. Yeah. Therefore, it's it's not a really smart strategy.
I often see that people kind of struggling with their own self-worth when they're in a different size body will quite often continue that cycle through, you know, eating things that don't make them feel good, because they actually get into this kind of, well, F it, I'm already, you know, I'm already fat, I'm already used to it. Like, they kind of, it's like that self-sabotaging, almost like not,
you worth know, taking I don't care feel of good themselves. About,
yeah, I'm not worth yeah. it. I'm not worthy of that. And, you know, feelings of sadness and all that kind of stuff can lead to them just not honoring their health. You have plenty of clients who say to me, I don't feel good when I do that, and I don't feel good when I eat that or in that amount, but I can't seem to stop myself from doing it. And a lot of it is we circle right back around to their self-worth and you know, really taking care of themselves in terms of, you know, I matter.
Yeah I love that. I think we need to wrap up. I want to close this out by saying, you know, if you're someone who is absolutely someone who says, but I need to lose weight, our advice would be, what would our advice be?
I feel like you were just about to say it. And then
all right. Our advice would be, if you are someone who is marginalized and discriminated against because of your weight, then we are not going to be sitting here saying that you don't need to lose weight, because we understand. We probably don't understand to the degree that you experience the world being shitty towards you. But body autonomy, absolutely number one. We get the pressure, but the message is, you know, the world is fucked up and not supportive of all bodies, and that's why people feel the compulsion to lose weight. If you're someone who feels like you need to lose weight for a desirability perspective, really check your other relationships and what actually is desirable to you and what you value in your relationships. And can you believe that other people value those things in you? And if it's from a health perspective, then I think we're going to link to the resources that the ones that we just mentioned about morbidity and about health promoting behaviors and BMI. We'll link them in the show notes. So if you're someone that wants to geek out on some research or statistics, then we will pop them in there.
Definitely. And our door's always open if you're looking for support and coaching. Both Gillian and I both have space for one-to-one coaching right now. And you don't have to have let go of that feeling that you want to lose weight to start working with us. It's absolutely fine to start whenever you feel that you just want some support and some help.
I would even go so far as to say that if you have lost the desire to lose weight, you probably don't need to work with us.
That's true.
Right? You're probably just away living your best life, not even listening to this podcast. But if you're struggling with the fact that weight loss has been hide into nothing for you and maybe really caused some trouble in your life, yet you still hold that desire, then those are the folks that we work with.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's part of the process. We will help you dial down that voice and dial down that kind of burning flame of the pursuit of weight loss.
Yeah, and all our links are in the show notes. So just scroll to the bottom of the details and you can find out how to work with us. And we will be back in a couple of weeks.
We will do. Take care in the meantime. Bye.